Mama Kay, who's Vonda?
After reading lessons, Mama Kay took a cup of utai before they started on politics, history, and court etiquette. After Azoth trained with Blint all morning, he studied with her through the afternoon. He was exhausted and sore all the time, but he slept through the whole of every night and woke warm, not shivering. The gnawing voice and debilitating weakness of hunger was only a memory. He never complained. If he did, they might make him go back.
That is a very delicate question.
Does that mean you won't tell me?
It means I don't want to. But I will, because you may need to know, and the man who should tell you won't. Oh. Vonda was Durzo's lover. Durzo had a treasure, and Kalidor's God King wanted it. You remember what I taught you about Kalidor?
Azoth nodded. Mama Kay opened her eyes and lifted her eyebrows.
Kalidor is our northern neighbor. They've always said Tanari and most of Midkiru is theirs, but they can't take it because Logan's dad is at Screaming Winds.
The pass at Screaming Winds is highly defensible. And the prize?
Azoth looked at her blankly.
Kalidor could go around the mountains the long way, but they don't because...
Because we're not really worth it. And the Sakage runs everything.
Cenaria is corrupt. The treasury is empty. The Kurans raid us from the south, and the Lai Kanat holds our eastern lands. And they hate Kalidorans even more than they hate most mages. So, yes, we're not worth taking.
Isn't that what I just said?
You were right, but not for all the right reasons.
Mama Kay sipped her utai again, and Azoth thought she'd forgotten his original question. Or that she hoped he had.
To get Durzo's treasure, the God King kidnapped Vonda and proposed a trade. The treasure for Vonda's life. Durzo decided that his treasure was more important. So he let her die. But something happened and Durzo lost his treasure too. So Vonda died for no reason whatsoever.
You're mad at him.
It was a great treasure, Azoth. If I were Durzo, I might have done the same, except for one thing. Vonda was my little sister.
Solon caught the edge of the halberd with his long sword and heaved it aside, then stepped in and kicked Logan in the stomach. A few years ago, that kick would have reached his helmet. He supposed he should be thankful that he could beat the Dire at all, but that was what came of having as his best friend a prophet and a second echelon blade master.
Thea would have words about how fat I've let myself get. And slow.
My lord!
Wendell North approached the fighting men. Logan stepped away from a match he was losing, and Solon followed him. The steward gave Solon a flat stare, but didn't protest his presence.
My lord, your mother has just returned.
Oh? Where was she, Wendell? Master North?
She spoke with the queen.
Why?
She put forth a petition for guardianship.
What?
She's asking the crown to appoint her to be duchess until the duke returns or until my lord reaches the age of majority, which in this country, Master Tofusen, is 21.
But we have my father's letters appointing me. The king can't interfere with the house's appointments unless they're guilty of treason.
That's not altogether true, my lord. The king may appoint a guardian to an underage lord if the previous lord of the house hasn't left the necessary provisions. It comes down to this. Your father left two copies of the letter appointing you lord in his absence. He gave one to your mother and the other to me. As soon as I heard where Lady Katrina went, I checked my copy, which I kept under lock and key. It's gone. Forgive me, Lord Geyer. I swear I had no part in this. I thought I had the only key.
What did the queen say?
Well, the matter might have been handled fairly easily. But the king doesn't let the queen make any decisions without him. He interrupted them while they were speaking, and he said that he would take the matter under advisement. I'm sorry. I don't know what that means.
I'm afraid I do.
What?
Who's your family's solicitor?
I asked you first.
Boy!
Count Rimbled Drake.
It means we need to speak with Count Drake. Now.
Do I have to wear the shoes?
Azoth didn't like shoes. You couldn't feel the ground to know how slick it was, and they pinched.
Nah. We'll go see Count Drake with you wearing a nobleman's tunic and barefoot.
Really?
No.
For all the times Azoth had envied the merchants and lords' sons at the markets, he'd never thought of how uncomfortable their clothes were. But Durzo was his master now, and he was already impatient with how long it was taking Azoth to get ready, so Azoth kept his mouth shut. He hadn't been Durzo's apprentice for long, and he still worried the wet boy would throw him out. They walked across Vanden Bridge to the east side. To Azoth, it was a revelation. He'd never even tried to cross Vanden Bridge and hadn't believed the guild rats who claimed to have made it past the guards. On the east side of the river, there were no ruins, no empty buildings at all. There were no beggars in the streets. It smelled different, foreign, alien. Azoth couldn't smell the manure of the cattle yards at all. Even the gutters were different. There was only one every third street, and none in the major streets. People didn't just throw their slops and sewage out the windows and let them accumulate until they gradually flowed away. Here, they carried them to the third street and dumped them there to flow down stone channels in the cobblestone streets so that even those streets were safe to walk in. Most alarming, though, was that the people smelled wrong. The men didn't smell of sweat and their labors. When a woman passed, she smelled only lightly of perfume rather than overpoweringly of it with the stale odors of sweat and sex laced underneath. Azoth asked Blint about it.
You're going to be a lot of work, aren't you?
They passed a wide building that was billowing steam. Glistening, perfectly coiffed men and women were emerging. Azoth didn't even ask.
It's a bathhouse. Another Curin import. The only difference is that here the men and women bathe separately, except in Mama Kay's, of course.
The owner of the Tipsy Tart greeted Blint as Master Tuli'i. He answered her with an accent and an effete attitude and ordered his carriage brought around. Once they were underway, Azoth spoke.
Where are we going? Who's Count Drake?
He's an old friend. A noble who has to work for a living. He's a solicitor.
Azoth looked puzzled.
A solicitor is a man who does worse things within the law than most crooks do outside it. But he's a good man. He's going to help me make you useful.
Master, how's Doll Girl?
She's not your problem anymore. You're not to ask about her again.
A minute passed as the streets rolled by.
She's in bad shape, but she'll live.
Blint said nothing more until they were shown into the Count's tiny estate. Count Drake was a kindly-looking man of perhaps 40. He had a pince-nez tucked in a pocket of his vest, and he limped as he closed the door behind them and took a seat behind a desk piled high with stacks of papers.
I never thought you'd take an apprentice, Durzo. In fact, I seem to remember you swearing it. And swearing at great length.
And I still believe every word I said.
Ah, you are either being terrifically subtle or making no sense at all, my friend.
Count Drake smiled, and Azoth could tell it was a real smile, without malice or calculation. Despite himself, Durzo smiled too.
They've been missing you, Rimbold.
Really? I wasn't aware of anyone shooting at me for some time.
Azoth almost fell out of his chair. He hadn't thought the wet boy was capable of laughter.
I need your help.
All I have is yours, Durzo.
I want to make this boy new.
What are you thinking?
A noble of some sort, relatively poor. The kind who gets invited to social events but doesn't attract attention.
The third son of a baron, then. He'll be upper nobility, but nobody important. Or wait, an eastern baron. My second cousin lives 2 days' ride beyond Havermere, and most of their lands have been seized by the Lai Connacht. So, if you want an ironclad identity, we could make him a stern.
That will do.
First name?
Azoth?
Not your real name, son, your new name.
Kyler.
The Count produced a piece of blank paper and put on the pince-nez.
How do you want to spell that? K-Y-L-E-R? K-I-L-E-R?
K-Y-L-A-R.
Old Jaren Punning?
You know me.
No, Durzo. I don't think anyone does. Still, Kind of ominous, don't you think?
It fits the life.
How soon do you need this, and how solid does it have to be?
Solid. And sooner is better.
I thought so. I'll make it good enough that unless the real Stones come here, no one will ever know. Of course, you're still left with a rather significant problem. You have to train him to be a noble.
Oh, no, I don't.
Of course you... Oh, I see. When shall I take him?
In a few months, if he lives that long. There are things I need to teach him first.
Durzo looked out the window.
Who's that?
Ah, that's young Lord Logan Gaia, a man who will make a fine duke one day.
No, the Sethi.
I don't know. I haven't seen him before. He looks like an advisor.
Damn.
Durzo grabbed Azoth's hand and practically dragged him out the door.
Are you ready to obey?
Azoth nodded quickly.
You see that boy?
You call that a boy?
The young man the Count had called Logan Gaia wore a green cloak with black piping, fine black leather boots polished to a high sheen, a cotton tunic, and a sword. He was 20 paces from the door and was being shown in by a porter. His face looked young, but his frame made him look years older than Azoth. He was huge, already taller than Azoth would probably ever be, and thicker and wider than anyone he knew, and he didn't look fat. Where Azoth felt awkward and clumsy in his clothes, Logan looked comfortable, confident, handsome, lordly. Just looking at him made Azoth feel shabby.
Start a fight with him. Distract the Sethi until I can get out.
Logan!
Sarah!
Azoth looked at Master Blint, but he was gone. There was no time to say anything. It didn't matter whether he understood or not. There were mysteries he wasn't allowed to understand yet. He could only act or wait, obey or disobey. The porter opened the door and Azoth stepped back around the corner out of sight. As Logan stepped inside and looked up the stairs, a smile curving his lips, Azoth stepped around the corner.
I'm so sorry.
You fat ape! You clumsy gutter-shite!
I didn't!
Logan's mild expression was gone. His face was a mask, intense, but not furious. He grabbed Azoth's cloak and lifted him off the ground. Azoth threw punches blindly, his fists grazing Logan's cheeks and chin.
Stop it! Stop it!
Logan's intensity flashed into fury. He shifted his hands and held Azoth off the ground with one, then buried his other fist in Azoth's stomach once, twice. Then a fist the size of a sledge flattened his nose. Then, Azoth felt himself being spun in a tight circle and, briefly, flying. Logan had insisted on going upstairs to help the Countess take care of young Kyler Stern. He was mortified, and apparently not solely because he'd lost his temper in front of Count Drake's pretty daughter. For Solon, it had been an instructive 10 seconds. Count Drake and Solon were left alone. The Count led him to his office.
Why don't you sit down? Where are you from, Master Tofusen?
That's the first time I've been asked that question.
Solon gestured to himself as if to say, just look at my skin.
Well, I don't see any clan rings or any scars where they've been removed.
Well, not all Sethi wear the rings.
I was under the distinct impression that they did.
What is this? What are you after?
Well, I'm curious about who you really are, Master Tofusen. Logan Gaia is not only a fine young man whom I regard almost as a son, he's also suddenly the lord of one of the most powerful houses in the land. I've never seen or heard of you, and suddenly you're his advisor. That strikes me as peculiar. I don't care that you're Sethi, if you are, but I've spent some time on Hokai and Taugathu, and the only Sethi who don't pierce their cheeks are exiles stripped of clan and family. But if you are an exile, you should have scars from your rings being torn out, and you have none.
Your knowledge of our culture is admirable, but incomplete. I am of House Tofusen, Windseekers of the Royal House. My father's appointment was to Shokendi.
An ambassador to the Red Mages?
Yes. Shokendi accepts students from all over the world. As I had no magical talent, I received my education among the merchants and nobles, who are not as tolerant. Not having the rings made life a little easier. There's more to it than that, but I don't think the rest of my story is any of your business.
Fair enough.
What took you to Seth?
Slavery. Before I became fully part of the movement that ended the slavery here 7 years ago, I thought a more moderate path might work. I went to Hokai to see if I could learn the ways to make slaves' lives better.
From the small size of his house, which was very small for a noble, even one as low as a count, Sola knew that Count Drake hadn't been one of the slavers who felt guilty about his newfound wealth. He must have been a real crusader all along.
It's totally different in Seth. The year of joy changes everything.
Yes, I advanced the idea here. Even got the law passed, but the Sakage immediately suborned it. Instead of the slave being freed on the seventh year, slaves were to be freed 7 years from the beginning of their indenture. The Sakage claimed it was simpler, that it would be ridiculous to buy a slave in the sixth year and own them for only a month or a week. Of course, in practice, the Sakage's people kept the records. So where in your country the seventh year is full of celebration as every slave is freed, here the years have passed and the slaves were never freed. Slaves became slaves for life. They were beaten, scourged, given to the death games, the children sent to baby farms.
I've heard those became truly awful.
The Sakage set them up, saying that they would be places where the children of prostitutes might be redeemed. Slaves, true, but redeemed. It sounded good, but it gave us places like the House of Mercy. Sorry, I shouldn't go on. It was a dark time. Is that boy ever coming down?
Maybe we should get started. I don't think this will wait, and from the way Logan was looking at your daughter, they may be talking a while.
Are you testing me now?
Does Duke Geyer know?
Yes, he and I are friends. Regnus is loath to demand control of Logan's flirtations, given the circumstances of his own marriage.
I'm not familiar with those. Can you enlighten me?
Well, it's not my place. Anyway, Logan and Sarah will grow out of it. What appears to be the problem?
Katrina Geyer.
Careful.
Did the Duke give you letters that declared his son, Lord Geyer, in his absence?
Yes, he spoke of it, but he had to leave quickly. He said his steward would bring them.
Lady Geyer has stolen the letters and destroyed them. Then she went to the Queen.
She went to whom?
Is that unusual?
They have no love for each other. What happened?
Lady Geyer asked to be made Logan's guardian. The King overheard them. He came in and said he would take it under advisement. What does that mean?
It means that if he acts quickly, he can appoint a guardian for Logan.
Will Katrina Geyer do such a poor job?
Legally, the King can put anyone in Logan's place that he wants so long as they're related to him, which means almost anyone in the nobility. And once he's got a guardian in place, even Regnus won't be able to rescind the appointment. Katrina has just delivered House Geyer to the King.
But you're Duke Geyer's solicitor. And he told you his wishes. Doesn't that carry any weight?
If the King were interested in the truth, yes. As it is, to save the Geyers, we'd need the family parchment, the Duke's great seal, and a reckless willingness to forge a state document. The King holds court in half an hour. I'd guess this will be the first item on the agenda. There's just no time.
Solon produced a roll of heavy parchment and a large seal. Count Drake grinned and snatched the parchment.
I think I suddenly like you, Master Tofusen.
Wendell North helped me with the wording. I thought I'd leave the signature and the seal to you.
Count Drake rummaged through his desk, found a letter from the Duke, and laid it on top of the writ of guardianship. With quick, sure strokes, he forged the Duke's signature flawlessly.
Let's just call it an artifact of misspent youth.
Then here's to misspent youth.
Next time you'll move.
Oh, I don't think I'll ever move again. My head feels like someone threw it against a wall.
Blint was sitting on the edge of Azoth's bed.
You did well. They thought you were embarrassed because you got knocked down in front of Drake's daughter. So they decided it was all harmless kid stuff. The young Lord Geyer was mortified that he hit you. Apparently, he's a real big friendly giant. Never loses his temper. The fact you're about a quarter his size and Sarah was furious with him also helps. They were all quite impressed.
Impressed? That's stupid.
In their world, fighting has rules. So fighting means risking embarrassment and pain, and at worst, risking your looks if you get a broken nose or an unfortunate scar. It doesn't mean dying or killing. In their world, you can fight a man and then become his friend. In fact, you're going to play it so Logan does become your friend, because with a man like him, you can only come out of this as a great friend or a terrible enemy. We'll work together on your new identity soon.
Yes, sir. Sir, why didn't you want Master Tofusen to see you? That's why you made me fight Logan, isn't it? To be a distraction?
Solon Tofusen is a magus. Most magi, that's male magus, can't tell if you're talented just by looking at you. On the other hand, most magi, female mages, can. There are disguises against their sight that I'll teach you later, but I didn't have the time to do it, and I didn't feel like going upstairs and jumping out a window.
But he doesn't act like a mage.
And how would you know?
He isn't like the mages in stories.
The truth is, Solon hasn't told Logan or anyone else that he's a mage, and you won't tell anyone either. When you know a man's secrets, you have power over him. A man's secret is his weakness. Every man has a weakness, no matter...
Master Blint's eyes turned suddenly distant, lifeless. He stood and left without a word. Azoth closed his eyes, confused. He wondered about his new master. He wondered about the guild. He wondered if Jalaliel had bought review. He wondered how Jarl was doing. Most of all, he wondered about Doll Girl.
Hey ho, Hazel.
Hi-o, Jayo.
Even as he gave the words the same stress he always had, Azoth felt part of himself die. This was supposed to be one of his last outings as Azoth. Soon he would have to become Kyler. He would walk differently, talk differently. He wouldn't ever visit his old neighborhoods in the Warrens. But now, he saw that Azoth's world was already dying, that he would never connect with Jarl again. It had nothing to do with the lies Kyler would tell, and everything to do with Rat. It was different now. It always would be. Azoth and Jarl looked at each other for a long moment in the common room of Mama Kay's house. It was almost midnight, and the guild rats would soon be shooed out of the house. They were welcome in the common room all day, but they were allowed to sleep here only in the winter. And then, only if they obeyed her rules. No fighting, no stealing, no going anywhere but the kitchen and the common room, and no bothering the adults who visited. Any guild rat who broke the rules got his entire guild banned from Mama Kay's for the winter. Usually, it was a death sentence for the offender, because it meant the whole guild would have to sleep in the sewers to stay warm, and they would kill him for that. Still, the place was always crowded. There was a fireplace and a floor covered with soft rugs good for sleeping on. Those rugs had once been clean, but were now stained from their filthy bodies. Despite the damage, Mama Kay never got mad at them, and every few months, new rugs showed up. There were durable chairs the guild rats were allowed to sit on, toys, dolls, and piles of games they could play. Sometimes Mama Kay even brought them treats. Here they gambled and bragged and gossiped freely with anyone who was here, even children outside their own guild. It was the only place the guild rats were allowed to resemble children. It was the only safe place they knew. Coming back, it looked different. What had seemed so recently the very lap of luxury now was just a plain room, with plain furnishings and simple toys because the guild rats would ruin anything better. They would stain everything and break anything delicate, not from malice, but from ignorance. The place was the same. It was Azoth who had changed. Azoth, or Kyler, whichever he was, marveled at the stench of the guild rats. Didn't they smell themselves? Weren't they ashamed? Or was it just him? Ashamed to see what he had been. As he always did after his reading lesson with Mama Kay, Azoth had looked for Jarl. But now that they were face to face, neither could find anything to say.
I need your help.
There was no way to cover what he wanted. He wasn't here to visit a friend. He was here to do a job.
My help?
I need to know what's happened to Dolgo. Where is she? And I need to know what's happening with the guilds.
I guess you wouldn't know.
No.
Guilds weren't part of his life now. Nothing was like it used to be.
Your master hit you?
Jarl was looking at Azoth's black eyes.
I got this in a fight. He does hit me, but not like...
Not like Rat?
How is he?
Why don't you tell me? You're the one who killed him.
Azoth opened his mouth, but seeing two littles in Mama K's front room, stopped.
Blint made you kill Rat to see if you could do it, didn't he?
No. Are you crazy?
In his head, he could hear the echoes of Master Blint's voice from their training.
Word gets out. Word always gets out.
Hurt filled Jarl's eyes, and he said nothing for a long time.
I shouldn't push, Azoth. I'm sorry. I should just thank you. Rat, he messed me up bad. I'm so confused all the time. I hated him. But sometimes, when Rat disappeared, and I saw you walking away with Blint, sometimes I hate you. You left me with no one. But that's not right. You didn't do anything wrong. Just Rat and me.
Azoth didn't know what to say. Jarl blinked furiously again.
Shut up, Jarl. Shut up. What do you need?
There was something Azoth should say. He knew it. Some assurance he should give. But he didn't know what it was. Jarl had been his friend. Was his friend, wasn't he? But he changed. Azoth had changed. He was supposed to be Kyler now, but instead, he was just a fraud straddling two worlds and trying to hold on as they tore apart. Whatever the cataclysm named Rat had left Azoth holding on to, one thing was certain. A chasm had opened between him and Jarl, and Azoth was afraid to even approach it. Didn't understand what it was, didn't know anything except that it made him feel dirty and scared. Jarl was letting him put the walls back up by asking his simple question. A simple question that could be answered simply. A problem that they could actually resolve.
Dolgo.
Oh, you know she got...
Is she all right now?
She's alive, but I don't know if she's going to make it. They make fun of her. Without you around, she isn't like she used to be. I've been sharing my food with her, but the guild's falling apart. Yeah. Things are too bad. We don't have enough food. Jalaliel's almost dead. Turns out Rat stole his review money. And now they lost the waterfront to Burning Man, and others are closing in.
Why?
If you've got to know, they threw me out of Black Dragon. Threw us all out. Didn't want buggers and rat lovers, they said.
You don't have a guild?
It was a disaster. Guild rats without a guild were fair game for anyone. That Jarl had stayed alive since being expelled was surprising. That he'd had food to share with Dahlgirl was amazing. And that he was willing to was humbling.
Some of us have banded together for a little while. They call us the buggers. I'm going to try to join Two-Fist on the north side. Rumor is they might get the market on Durdan soon.
That was Jarl. Always had a plan.
They're willing to take Dahlgirl too?
Azoth was answered with guilty silence.
I asked. I did, Azoth. It just won't do it. If you...
I'm not going to make you ask, Jarl. I've been looking for you to give it back.
Azoth lifted his tunic and unwrapped the sash full of coins. He handed it to Jarl.
Azoth, this is twice as heavy as it was.
I'll take care of Dahlgirl. Give me a couple of weeks. Can you take care of her for that long?
Jarl's eyes were filling with tears, and Azoth was afraid his would, too. They called each other Jarl and Azoth now, not J-O and Azo.
I'm going to tell Mama Kay how smart you are and see if she has work for you. You know, if things don't work out with Two-Fist.
You do that for me?
Sure, J-O.
Azo?
Yeah?
I just wish...
Me too, Jarl. Me too.
The price of disobedience is death.
The words kept running through his head every day as Azoth planned his disobedience. Azoth's training was brutally hard, but it wasn't brutal. In the guilds, a fist might beat you to make a point and make a mistake that left you permanently maimed. Master Blint never made mistakes. Azoth hurt exactly as much as Blint wanted him to. Usually, that was a lot. But so what? Azoth had two meals a day. He could eat as much as he wanted, and Blint worked the soreness out of his muscles every day as they trained. At first, everything was curses and beatings. Azoth couldn't do anything right. But curses were just air, and beatings were just momentary pain. Blint would never maim Azoth, and if he chose to kill him, there was nothing Azoth could do to stop him anyway. It was the closest thing to safety he'd ever known. Within weeks, he realized he liked the training. The sparring, the blunted practice weapons, the obstacle courses, even the herb lore. Learning reading with Mama Kay was hard, but so what? 2 hours of frustration a day was nothing. Azoth's life was good. Within a month, he realized that he was talented. It wasn't obvious, and if he hadn't been so keyed in to Master Blint's every mood and reaction, he would never have noticed. But now and then, he'd see a faint look of surprise as he mastered some new skill more quickly than Master Blint had expected. It made him work all the harder, hoping to see that look not once a week, but once a day. For her part, Mama Kay made him decipher squiggles for longer than he could imagine. She had a way of smiling and saying just the right thing that it pulled him along through the hours.
Words are power. Words are another sword for the man who wields them well.
And Azoth would need them if the world was to believe that he was Kyler Stern. So Mama Kay worked with him on his alternate identity, quizzing him with likely questions other nobles would ask, helping him come up with harmless stories about growing up in Eastern Sonaria, and teaching him the rudiments of etiquette. She told him Count Drake would teach him the rest once he went to live with the Drakes. When Azoth walked in Drake's door, she said he would be Kyler forever after. Blint would train him in a safe house on the east side. Mama Kay would meet with him in one of her homes on the east side. Only when he started accompanying Blint on jobs would he return to the Warrens. Azoth worked hard for her, and without complaint, except for one time when he got disgusted at his own stupidity and threw a book across the room. He worked in the hell of Mama Kay's displeasure for a week, until he brought her some flowers he'd stolen and she forgave him. He'd given Jarl plenty of money to take care of Doll Girl, but Jarl wouldn't be able to just give her the money. Someone would steal it. The worst part of it was that she was alone, mute and with a horribly beaten face. She wouldn't be making any friends either.
The price of disobedience is death. You will never see Doll Girl again. Ever.
Mama Kay told Azoth that Master Blint would eventually come to like him and trust him, but that when he said things like that, for now, Azoth should take it as law. That made Azoth hopeful, until she clarified. Street law, which was immutable and omnipotent, not the pathetic king's law. It was a shame because Azoth had to see Doll Girl one last time. When he did get his chance, it was through no guile of his own. Master Blint had a job, so he simply left Azoth to his own devices. He left a list of chores, too, but Azoth knew that if he hurried, he could finish all the chores and still have several hours before he was supposed to meet with Mama Kay for his reading lesson. He threw himself into his work with a fury. He dusted the weapons room, climbing up on a ladder to reach the higher rows of weapons and the equipment out of his reach. He checked and cleaned the wood practice weapons. He oiled and cleaned the weapons Master Blint had used recently. He worked a different kind of oil into the leather targets and dummies that Master Blint made him attack by the hour. He checked the seams on the ones Master Blint himself had kicked, and finding several burst, sewed them shut again. He wasn't very good with a needle, but Master Blint tolerated less than perfect work here, if nowhere else. He swept the floor and, as always, didn't throw the dirt out into the street, but collected it into a small bin. Master Blint didn't want him to leave the safe house. Not ever, unless he was under direct orders. He found himself cleaning one of Blint's daggers a second time. It was a long, thin blade with tiny gold filigree. Through chance or age, The gold was thin in the grooves that had been etched for it, so blood had collected in every narrow groove of the filigree. Blint had used this blade recently, and he must have been in a hurry when he sheathed it, so Azoth found himself using the point of another fine dagger to pick out the blood. He should have soaked the blade in water and then scrubbed it vigorously, but this was his last chore. It was still 3 hours until he was supposed to be at Mama Kay's. If he had to work on chores until then, it wouldn't be his fault that he didn't leave.
What happens if you do nothing? Nothing. There's a price and a terrible freedom to that boy. Remember it.
Master Blint had been speaking of making your move on a debtor when things looked risky, but Azoth could feel the burden of those words now.
If I do something, what's the worst that could happen? Master Blint kills me.
That was pretty bad. The odds of it were low, though. Unlike other wet boys who might spend their whole lives in the Warrens, Master Blint only took jobs from people who could afford his prices. That usually meant nobles. That always meant Eastside. So he'd be on the opposite side of the city from Azoth.
The real worst case if I do nothing? Doll girl dies.
He put down the dagger with a grimace. Finding Doll Girl was easier said than done. The Black Dragon Guild had ceased to exist. It was just gone. Kyla went to their old territory and found that it had been swallowed by Red Hand, Burning Man, and Rusty Knife. The old black dragon scrawled on buildings and aqueducts were already fading. He wore a pair of daggers, but he didn't have to use them. Once he was stopped by some Burning Men, but one of the bigs used to be one of his lizards. The boy spoke a few words to the others who were about to try to rob Azoth, and they eased away. The lizard never said a word to him. He crisscrossed their old territory half a dozen times, but he never found Doll Girl. Once, he thought he saw Corbin Fischel, someone he'd always known was important, and who he now knew, Master Blint had told him, was one of the Nine. But all the guild rats he saw kept their distance. Time was running out when Azoth finally thought of the old bakery. Doll Girl was there, alone. She had her back to him, and for a moment he paused, afraid to get her attention. Then she turned. Rat's sadism was evident. A month hadn't been long enough for her wounds to heal. It had only been long enough to show both what her face must have looked like for the last weeks and what it would look like for the rest of her life. Rat had beaten her first, just beat her into submission or unconsciousness. Then he'd taken a knife to her face. One deep cut looped from the corner of her left eye to the corner of her mouth. It had been stitched with dozens of tiny stitches, but the resulting scar would tug the corner of Doll Girl's mouth up into an unnatural grin forever. Her other cheek bore a broad X-shaped cut, which was matched again by a smaller X across her lips in front. Eating, smiling, frowning, moving her mouth at all must have been excruciating. One of her eyes was still swollen, and Azoth wasn't sure if she'd ever be able to see out of it again. The rest of the wounds looked like they would fade. A scab on her forehead, the barest yellow around her other eye as the black faded, and a nose that must have been reset because Azoth was sure Rat had broken it. All in all, her face was, and was supposed to be, a testament to cruelty. Rat wanted anyone who ever looked at Doll Girl to know that she hadn't just had an accident. He wanted everyone to know that this had been done deliberately. For a moment, Azoth wished Rat's death had been even more horrible. Then, time seemed to start again. He was staring at Doll Girl, staring at his friend's face with open horror. Her eyes, that had been so full of surprise and sudden hope, brimmed full with tears. She covered herself and turned away, her thin shoulders shaking. Azoth sat next to her.
I came as soon as I could. I've got a master now, and I had to disobey him just to be here. But I couldn't leave you here. Things have been bad, huh?
Azoth could just imagine the names they must have called her. Sometimes he wanted to kill everyone in the world. How could they make fun of Doll Girl? How could they hurt her? It was a miracle she was still alive. A miracle. And John. Jarl must have risked his life a dozen times. Azoth scooted over and pulled her close. She turned and clung to him as if her tears would wash her away. Azoth held her. Time passed. Azoth felt like he'd been squeezed dry. He wasn't sure how long he'd held her, but he knew it had been too long.
I have good news.
Dahlgirl looked up at him with those big brown eyes.
Come with me.
Dahlgirl followed him out of the Warrens, over the Vanden Bridge, and to Count Drake's. Her eyes widened as they headed toward the Count's house, and further when the old porter opened the door for Azoth and showed them in. Count Drake was in his office.
Has Azoth told you why you're here, young lady?
The name was a deliberate choice, Azoth saw. Dahlgirl was part of Azoth's life. She wouldn't be part of Kyler's. She wasn't going to know his new name. Dahlgirl shook her head shyly, clinging to Azoth.
We found a family for you, Dahlgirl. They want you to come and be their daughter. They're going to take care of you. You'll never have to sleep on the streets again. They serve in a house here on the east side. If you don't want to, you never have to go back to the Warrens ever again.
Of course, it had all been a little bit more involved than that. Count Drake had known the family for some time. They had taken in other slave-born orphans over the years, but couldn't afford to feed another. So Azoth had sworn that he would provide for her out of his wages, which were already generous, and which Master Blint had told him would increase as he became more useful. Count Drake hadn't been enamored of keeping any secret from Master Blint, but after Azoth had explained what had happened, he'd been willing to help. Dahlgirl clung to Azoth, either not understanding or not believing what the Count had just said.
Well, I'm sure you have some things you probably wish to tell her. I need to get the coach in order, so if you'll excuse me.
Dahlgirl looked at Azoth with accusing eyes.
You never were dumb.
Dahlgirl squeezed his hand hard.
My master ordered me not to see you. Today is the last time we ever get to see each other.
Dahlgirl tugged on his hand, face pugnacious.
Yes, ever. I don't want it to be this way, but he'll kill me if he finds out I defied him even this much. I'm sorry. Please don't be mad at me.
Azoth knew there was nothing he could do.
I have to go now. He might be back any time. I'm sorry.
He tore his eyes from her and stepped toward the door.
Don't leave me.
The voice sent a lance of ice down his spine. He turned, incredulous. It was a little girl voice, exactly like you'd expect if you didn't know Dahlgirl was mute.
Please.
It was a pretty voice. Incongruous coming out of a beaten mask of a face Rat had left her.
You can't...
Azoth's eyes filled with tears again, and he ran out the door. Straight into someone tall and lean and as hard as if he'd been cut out of solid rock, Azoth stared up in horror. Master Blint's face was purple with fury.
You dare! After all I've done for you, you defy me? I just killed one of the Nine, and what do? You walk around the killing ground for 2 hours, so everyone knows Blint's apprentice was there. You may have cost me everything!
Azoth's face rebounded off the Count's floor, and he barely saw a doll girl flying at Master Blint as a huge black sword cleared its sheath. Insanely, he threw himself at Blint and grabbed Retribution's blade. But Blint was a force of nature. He didn't even slow as he scooped Dahlgirl up and deposited her in the hall. He turned back to Azoth, but whatever he was about to say died. The great black sword was still locked in Azoth's hands, cutting to the bone. Except that now it wasn't black. The blade was glowing blue. Incandescent blue fire surrounded Azoth's hand, burning cold into his cupped fingers, spreading down the blade.
No! Not that! It's mine! Yes!
Blint flung the sword aside as if it were an adder, away from both of them. If there had been fury in his eyes before, now it turned to absolute, unreasoning rage. Azoth didn't even see the first blow.
Yes!
Azoth didn't even know how he'd reached the floor again. Something wet and sticky was blocking out his vision. Then, the world faded into repeated heavy blows and exploding light and pain and the sharp, garlicky breath of Master Blint and banging on a door that seemed further and further away. Durzo gazed into the frothy brown ale as if it held answers. It didn't. And he had a choice to make. The usual forced gaiety of the brothel swirled around him, but nobody male or female bothered him. Perhaps it was retribution unsheathed on the table in front of him. Perhaps it was merely the look on his face. As if Durzo would murder some 7-year-old girl.
What kind of a monster does the boy think I am?
Then he remembered beating the shit out of the boy, artlessly pounding that yielding child flesh, beating him unconscious before Count Drake broke the door down and grabbed him. He'd almost killed Count Drake for that. He'd been so wild. The Count had fixed such a look on Durzo. Damn Count Drake and his damn holy eyes. That incandescent blue. Damn it. Damn all the magic. In that flash of blue on retribution, he'd seen his hope die. The hope had been dying since Vonda died, but that blue, it was a door slamming shut forever. It meant Azoth was worthy as Durzo was not, as if all of Durzo's years of service were worth nothing. The boy was taking from him all that made him special. What did that leave for Durzo Blint?
Ashes. Ashes and blood, and nothing more.
Suddenly, the sword Retribution before him seemed a mockery.
Retribution. Giving people what they deserve. If I really did that, I'd shove that damn blade down my own throat.
The last time he'd been so close to madness had been when Vonda died, 4 months and 6 days ago. Durzo swirled the ale around in the glass, but he didn't drink. Time enough for that later. Later, after he made his decision, he'd need a drink. He'd need 12, no matter what he decided. He'd drunk a lot with Vonda. It pissed her sister off. Of course, the whole relationship had pissed Mama Kay off. She'd forbidden Durzo to see her innocent little sister. She'd forbidden Vonda to see the wet boy. Mama Kay, so smart in other matters, had probably done more to get the relationship going than anything. Surrounded by easy flesh, whether he paid for it or not, Guinevere's little sister was suddenly intriguing. He wanted to know if the virginal bit was an act. It was. He'd been disappointed, but had hidden it. It was hypocrisy anyway, and she'd had plenty of other mysteries. Vonda didn't always treat him well, but at least she didn't fear him. He didn't think she understood him enough to fear him. She seemed to just glide along on the surface of life while others had to plunge into the sewer water. Durzo hadn't understood her, and it had entranced him. After their affair started, he might have kept it secret. He could have. He knew Guinevere's schedule well enough that they could have kept things going for years. Even with Guinevere's insight, Durzo knew how to be inscrutable. But it hadn't happened. Vonda had told her. Probably announced it immediately if Durzo knew Vonda. It might have been a little callous, but Vonda didn't know what she was doing.
End this now, Durzo Blint. She'll destroy you. I love my sister, but she will be your ruin.
It had all been words. Words to get Guinevere's way, as always. With all her power, it infuriated her that she couldn't run the lives of those she really wanted to. She'd been right, of course. Maybe not in the way she had meant it, but she'd been right. Guinevere always had understood him better than anyone else, and he'd understood her. They were mirrors to each other. Guinevere Kyrena would have been perfect for him, if he could love what he saw in the mirror.
Why am I thinking about this? It's all old shit. It's all finished.
There was a choice to be made. Did he raise the boy and hope? Or did he kill him now?
Hope. Right. Hope is the lies we tell ourselves about the future.
Durzo had hoped before, dared to dream about a different life. But when it came time...
You look pensive, Galen Starfire.
A Ladeshan bard sat himself across from Durzo without waiting to be asked.
I'm deciding who to kill. Call me that again and you jump to the front of the list, Aristarchos.
The bard smiled with the confidence of a man who knows he has perfect white teeth that only set off a handsome face.
We've been awfully curious about what's been happening for the last few months.
You and the society can go to hell.
I think you like the attention, Durzo Blint. If you wanted us dead, we'd be dead. Or are you really bound by this code of retribution? It's of considerable debate in the society.
Still fighting over the same questions, huh? Don't you all have anything better to do? Talk, talk, talk. Why don't you do something productive for once?
Well, we're trying, Durzo. In fact, that's why I'm here. I want to help you.
Oh, how kind.
You've lost it, haven't you? Have you lost it, or has it abandoned you? Do the stones really choose their own masters?
Here's why I've never been friends with any of you, Aristarchos. I don't know if your little circle has ever been interested in me, or if it's only interested in my power. Once, I was almost convinced to share some of my mysteries, but I realized that what I share with one of you, I share with all of you. So tell me, why would I give my enemies such power?
Is that what we've come to? Enemies? Why then do you not wipe us from the face of the earth? You're uniquely suited to such a task.
I don't kill without cause. Fear isn't enough to motivate me. It may be beyond your comprehension, but I can hold power without using it.
Then you're a better man than many have feared. I see now why you were chosen in the first place.
Aristarchos stood.
Know this, Durzo Blint. I am far from home and have not the means I might wish. But if you call on me, I will give you what help I can. And knowing that you have deemed the cause just will be enough explanation for me. Good day.
The man walked out of the brothel, smiling and winking at the whores who seemed disappointed to lose his business. He wore his charm like a mask, Durzo saw.
The masks change, but the maskers remain the same, don't they?
Durzo had lived with the bilge waste of humanity for so long, he saw filth in every heart. He knew the filth was there. He was right about that. Filth and darkness were even in Rimbold Drake's heart. But Drake didn't act from that darkness, did he? No. That masker, if only that one, had changed.
Fear isn't enough to motivate me. This while planning to murder a child. What kind of a monster am I?
He was caught now. Truly and desperately caught. He'd just killed Corbin Fischel. The man's death had been sanctioned by the Shinga and the rest of the Nine. Corbin had been managing the guilds as if he were in Kalidor, setting guild against guild, encouraging open war between them, and doing absolutely nothing to regulate brutality within the guilds. Kalidorans did such things in the belief that the best would naturally rise. But the Sakage wanted members, not monsters. Worse, they now had some indication that Corbin actually had been working for Kalidor. That was inexcusable. Not taking the work, but taking it without reporting it to the rest of the Nine. Loyalties had to be to the Sakage. The kill had been sanctioned, and it had been just. That didn't mean that Corbin's friends would accept it. Durzo had killed members of the Nine before, but he always took extra care to conceal whose work it was. Now, Azoth had tromped around his killing grounds for hours a little before the job was done, and a lot after. Enough people knew or guessed Durzo had taken Azoth as his apprentice that they couldn't fail to link the two. It was sloppy wet work, they'd say. Maybe Durzo Blint is slipping. Being the best made him a target. The appearance of weakness gave every second-rate wet boy hope that they could move up. Azoth couldn't have known, of course. Still didn't know many things. But in that flash of blue light from Retribution's blade, Durzo had seen his own death. If he let the boy live, Durzo would die. sooner or later.
And there it is, the divine economy. For someone to live, someone has to die.
Terzo Blint made his decision and started drinking.
Master Blint hasn't come to see me.
No.
It's been 4 days. You said he wasn't mad anymore.
Azoth made fists with his hands. He thought he had cut them, but they were fine. Lots of other places on his body hurt, so he hadn't just imagined being beaten, but his hands were fine.
3 days, and he's not mad. Drink this.
No, don't want any more of that stuff. It makes me feel worse.
Azoth regretted the words as soon as he said them. Mama Kay's eyebrows went up and her eyes went cold. Even huddled in warm blankets in a spare bedroom here in her house, when her eyes turned frosty, nothing could make you feel warm.
Child, let me tell you a story. Have you ever heard of the Snake of Haran?
Azoth shook his head.
The snake has 7 heads, but each time you cut one off, 2 more grow in its place.
Really? Is really such a thing?
No. In Haran, they call it the Snake of Ladesh. It's imaginary.
And why'd you tell me about it?
Are you being deliberately obtuse? If you'll let me finish, you'll see the story is an analogy. Analogies are lies grown-ups tell.
Why?
Oh, why does anyone tell lies? Because they're useful. Now drink your medicine and shut your mouth.
Azoth knew he was pushing it, so he didn't ask any more. He drank the thick mint and anise-flavored brew.
Right now, the Sakage has its own Snake of Haran, Azoth. Kyler. Do you know Corbin Fischel?
Azoth nodded.
Corbin was one of the 9. He ran the children's guilds.
Was?
Azoth wasn't supposed to know Corbin was even important, much less how important.
Durzo killed him 3 days ago. When the baby farms were shut down, the Sakage was given a chance to literally raise its own army. But Corbin was allowing, or encouraging, guild war that was wiping out the slave-born. And he was a spy. The Sakage thought he was a Kurren spy, but now they think he was taking money from Kalidor. The Kalidorans paid him in Kurren gold, probably in case he was found, and also so he wouldn't start spending the money immediately and bring attention to himself. Now that Corbin is dead, his things have been searched, and unfortunately, there hasn't been any clear answer. If he was Kalidoran, he was far more dangerous than we had thought, and the Sakage should have brought him in and had him tortured until they knew for sure. But at the time, they thought it was more important to set a graphic example of what happens to those who mismanage Sakage endeavors. The problem now is bigger. We don't think Corbin was in place long enough to cultivate any loyalty to Kalidor among the guilds. Street rats don't care much where their meals come from, but the fact Kalidor would work on taking over the guilds tells us that they are thinking long term.
How do you know he wasn't just the easiest person they could get in the Sakage?
We don't. Kalidor is putting down some rebellions right now, and it's not going well for them. But the God King has earned a reputation as a man who plans for victory, and my guess is that he thinks it may be years before he's ready to march south. But he wants Cenaria to fall at the slightest blow when he does. If he controls the Sakage, taking the city will be easy. Our problem is that if he was able to get a man as highly placed as Corbin, then there may be dozens of others. The other heads of the snake may show up at any time. Anyone we trust may be working for Kalidor.
Why is that your problem?
It's my problem because I'm one of the 9 too, Kyla. I am the mistress of pleasures.
Azoth's mouth formed a little O. Always before, the Sakage had been something dangerous, huge and distant. He supposed it fit. Everyone knew Mama Kay had been a whore and that she was wealthy, but he'd never even thought of it. Being the mistress of pleasures meant that Mama Kay controlled all of the prostitution in Cenaria. Everyone who plied the pleasure trade ultimately answered to her.
Aside from my girls' more strenuous duties, they also keep their ears open. You'd be amazed at how talkative men can be in front of what they think is just a dumb whore. I'm in charge of the Sakage spies. I need to know what Kalidor is doing. If I don't know, the Sakage doesn't know. And if we don't know, the country may fall. Believe me, we do not want Gareth Ursul as our king.
Why are you telling me all this? I'm nobody.
Azoth was nobody. You are about to become Kyla Stern. And I think you're smarter than Durzo gives you credit for. I'm telling you because we need you on our side. Azoth was stupid to go wandering the other day, and it may cost you or Durzo your lives. But if you had known what was happening, you wouldn't have gone there. You did the wrong thing. But Durzo shouldn't have beaten you for showing initiative. In fact, I'm sure he's sorry for beating you, though he'll never apologize. It isn't in the man to admit he's wrong. But we need you to be more than an apprentice, Kyla. We need you to be an ally. Are you ready for that?
Kyla nodded slowly.
What do you want me to do?